Hi everyone, and welcome to the Curve Mindset podcast in association with McGinley Coaching. I'm your co-founder and host, Laurie McGinley. Today we're joined by David Baird. How are you, David?
Yeah, very well, thanks Laurie, thanks for having me on.
No worries at all. Can you just tell the listeners a wee bit of background about yourself?
So I've been involved in predominantly coaching for kind of 16 years now. You know, came through the whole volunteer coaching and, you know, running summer camps and, you know, just trying to network and, you know, get as much experience as I can into, you know, travelling and working abroad, coaching adults, coaching kids, coaching youth players, male and female. So I've been involved in the game for quite a long time, as I say, predominantly coaching, but I have done a bit of kind of analysis and things like that as well. So, no, I just love the game and kind of, you know, looking forward to chat about it.
No, definitely. We've got quite a lot to chat about, but I was looking, when I did my research, you know, you went to America. You know, what was the kind of role there? What was your mindset kind of going abroad?
Yeah, no, mindset's a real crucial one to talk about when I talk about my experience in America, because for me, you had a couple of choices that you had to make in regards to how you were going to approach the situation. So I can only talk about my experience, but I know through friends and fellow coaches, it's quite a popular thing for people to go and work abroad in countries where perhaps the sport is growing. You know, it's not necessarily the national sport that is here in Scotland. There's loads of opportunities to go and coach. So I went over there and, yeah, what a fantastic experience, because you're coaching full-time, you're coaching every day, sometimes long hours, sometimes you're just taking one session a night, summer camps, sometimes you're out there all day. But your mindset could be, and I'm not having a go at this, I've got friends who maybe had this mindset, you could go through the motions if you wanted to. I think there's a lot of coaches that maybe came from a European soccer background that could go over there, you know, put on almost the same session every day, tried and tested things, you know, just put on things that worked, probably be looked at in a very positive light because they'd maybe played football in Europe, or they'd coached football in Europe, or they had UEFA accredited badges. And I do think you could go to America. I can only talk about America. I'm sure there's other scenarios as well. And your mindset could be quite complacent. You know, you're out there and you're having a great social life. You're meeting people from all around the world, because the company I work with recruited from all around the world. You're doing what you love. But you could go out there and I do think you could get complacent and, as I say, just put on the same session every night. So what my mindset was, what a great opportunity to learn, you know, learn by doing. I'm coaching every night. I've got great support from the organisation I'm working with. The role of the job allows me to coach 12 and 13-year-old girls one night, 15 and 16-year-old boys the next night, adults at the weekend. What a great opportunity to maybe come out of my comfort zone and instead of doing the same session every night, do a different session every night and learn from it. So from my experience, I've been over there for a number of years. I learned so much, you know, leaving there with a bank of lots and lots of, you know, written down session plans, things that work, things that needed adapted, things that didn't work, experiences that I got through talking with different players and working with different age groups, meeting different people. How do you manage, you know, the parents and guardians? How do you develop a love for the game? Because some of the young players I worked with, you were literally the one that introduced them to a soccer ball. What an amazing feeling, you know, that was, because maybe their parents were baseball or basketball fans. So yeah, my mindset was, not every coach gets this opportunity to coach every day, make loads of mistakes and learn from it. So that would be my advice if anyone's maybe, you know, looking to travel and get these experiences, you know, grab them with both hands.
Yeah, and you talk about that mindset. Do you think, obviously you talked to America, but see, obviously you're in Scotland and you probably worked in different areas. Do you think you have that mindset to not be a successful coach, but the person who just has a way, you know, like there's an aura? Because you've got, as you said, you could have the highest qualification in the world, but you could really, the connection with the player is not there. And you could have a level 1.1 and have that connection with the player. But you said it's about making mistakes, about learning. Do you think being on the grass is the best part of, you know, the job?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's there's not many substitutes for experience, and this is just my kind of view on it. I know there's other views out there, and not everything I say is absolute gospel, but I bang the drum a lot with young players in particular, that a great way to learn the game and, you know, get better at the game is to play the game. And I say the same to young coaches, because it really helped my experience that a great way to learn to coach is to coach and go out there and work with different age groups, get as much time on the grass, plan the level, and review as many sessions as you possibly can, go around that cycle. And of course, it's hard work, it's very draining, you need to give up a lot of time in regards to a social life and doing other things, but if you want to get better, I think it's a great way. And in regards to mindset, I think you need to be very, very open-minded as well, because it's too easy to see a coach delivering another session or to see the way a coach interacts with players and think, oh, I don't like that, or that's not the way I would do it, or that's not really great, or that coach is struggling, those area sizes are too small. You're only seeing a small part of that coach's journey. They might be, for that session, trying something new, or intentionally doing a session. Sometimes I think we don't see enough of this, intentionally doing a session that isn't supposed to work. We're very good at developing, passing, dribbling and shooting, but sometimes we're not great at developing grit, resilience, and all these kind of things. Sometimes make the area a little bit too tight and see how the players deal with it. Intentionally forget the bibs and see what the players do. Are they going to quickly jump to the blame game and say, oh, I keep giving the ball away because the coach forgot the bibs tonight? Or are they going to actually ramp up their scanning and communication and taking care of the ball and lifting their head? Forget to put out some cones to line the pitch and see what they do. See if one of them actually builds a bit of leadership and character and says to you, coach, we need another cone there. Oh, great, go get it then. And I'm not sure if I went on, a little bit of a tangent here, but by putting yourself out there, trying these things and not being too judgmental of other coaches, I think you can learn so much. And I love the expression that your mind's like a parachute, it works best when it's open. You need to be open-minded, try loads of different things, don't be too judgmental of other coaches. Maybe if you think someone did something that you wouldn't do, go and ask them why and what their thinking was behind it.
I love how you say there's a tangent, because I've got about 10 questions for it. I mean, I've only got through question one, and I'm going back to 1A, 1B and 1C at the moment. But it was just, you talked about, that's really interesting, because you see some of the younger players, and they sometimes look at the side for guidance, because yeah. It's like joystick coaching a little bit, that kind of term. But do you think having that, the players, making mistakes, coaches making mistakes, you've seen it in the Premier League, or see when it's a mid-block, but the fans are saying, you need to go and press, but there's a game plan behind that. Do you think holding your nerve and asking questions, why, and actually having the answer, for the other coaches and the players is actually a good thing? Because we really struggle with criticism in this country. But we are the first people to criticise, but when we criticise someone else, or obviously our feelings get a wee bit hurt. But I'm just wondering, do you think the experience you had in America and here, asking questions, do you think that's just the way forward and being curious?
Definitely being curious. And your point about fans saying you're sitting too deep, press up, you only need to go a couple of rows across and someone saying you need to draw back a little bit, you're too high. And it's the easiest job in the world, coaching as a fan, because you're not going to get proven otherwise. You might say, oh, we lost that game because we sat too deep. We're really, if they pressed high, they might have lost it by two or three. So, yeah, it's all a matter of opinions. I work predominantly in the youth development and working with the young ones. And, of course, we need to be mindful of what you described as kind of joystick coaching and kids becoming over-reliant on the coach helping them. I do think in vast areas in the UK that culture has changed, and we actually need to praise the fact that a lot of kids aren't doing that now. They are given a lot of freedom to play and problem solve, and there are a lot of coaches out there that are investing more in their observation as opposed to their vocal skills. Instead of commentating on everything and joystick coaching through training sessions and games, they are watching and trying to find common themes, and they're taking notes, and they're realising, okay, Laurie made that mistake, but I've actually kind of bit my tongue, let him continue to do the exercise, and now he's problem solved it. So he has ownership of that learning, and they're taking notes. But you also need to be taking notes and observing, because Laurie actually might make the same mistake 3 or 4 times, and then he needs a bit of, not joystick coaching, but he needs a bit of guidance through questions, as you said, you know, giving the ball away there, what can we do? You know, well, maybe I could scan and, you know, go back to the goalkeeper, whatever it might be. So, yeah, it's different environments for different people, different players, different age groups, and all these kind of things. So, yeah, there's no right or wrong in coaching, really.
No, well, I usually make mistakes and then get criticised and then have to ask why and then all that. So that's a different story. But thanks for... It's usually little Jimmy, usually, but Laurie's the good one. But you know, you've worked in youth development. We're just touching that, you know, worked at Hearts. What was your role at Hearts, Hearts and Midlothian?
Yeah, I worked in at Hearts, the fantastic academy. Ended up just going in there, taking one of the age groups. I think I started with under 11 boys, maybe. And yeah, it was another good environment just to be in coaching. Stayed with that team for a couple of years up through the age groups. Went back down, worked with a younger team. Then moved into the girls game. So yeah, I was always just a coach, but they were always very good at putting on, you know, coach education, first team manager coming in and doing something, or a guest speaker coming in and doing something. And yeah, it was just another part of the experience. You know, the whole time that I was coaching in at Hearts on a, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, and, you know, game on a Saturday, I was still out volunteering on my local kind of grassroots clubs on the Monday, Wednesday and Saturday. So I think it's good not to just focus on one programme or one club. If you have the opportunity to do it, I know it's very, very tough, and a lot of people build their coaching around their children, for example. You know, they'll go out and they'll coach their child's team because that's an opportunity to spend time with them, and, you know, they could be somewhere else where their kids at football training, you know, car sharing and all this kind of stuff. But it's a great opportunity. It ties in with my experience abroad, not just to see, you know, one group and one team, because all of a sudden that becomes your world, and the best player in that group becomes the best player in the world, and the weakest player becomes the weakest player in the world. And sometimes if you just kind of set your horizons a little bit wider, you know, so when I was in that environment at Hearts, yeah, when my session finished, I'd stay and I'd watch the next group that were coming on. You know, a little bit of networking and ask, is it okay to watch this group? You know, can I come along on Friday and watch the younger ones train? And, you know, would it be okay to come in and see a little bit of the 18s? And, yeah, make sure you have this broad... It's just experience, isn't it, Laurie? It ties back into our earlier one. So I was in Hearts for a number of years. Previously, before that, I was in Hibs as well. So you talk about getting contradictory experience. You know, I coached in there and also did a performance analysis internship in there with them. Been in at Hamilton Accies. Yeah, worked at various clubs. Spent some time in America, as you've touched on, but also spent some time in Dubai, in the Middle East. Totally different experience, totally different mindset. Take you out of your comfort zone. You know, my experience over there was session with 12 kids, maybe 8 different languages, because there's so many kind of expats that play over in Dubai, just because of the nature of the landscape there. So now you're looking at different experiences, a little less, you know, verbal instruction and a little bit more body language and demo with you with the ball at your feet. I think we keep coming back to the same thing, don't we? It's all about experience, and it's all about making sure that you're taking notes and you're learning from these experiences. You're not just letting them pass you by.
Yeah, and obviously experience is gets you kind of higher up in different kind of jobs, you know, and you work for the Scottish FA. Can you just tell us the role around that, kind of your mindset, you know, when there, and kind of one of the kind of, what's the kind of favourite part of the job? I'm guessing it's probably being on the field all the time, so...
Yeah, and again, I'm lucky to work in the association, and I could talk about how fantastic the Scottish Football Association is. I think they have a world-class coach education department and coach education courses and all this kind of stuff, and I'm very lucky that my role, there's been a lot of opportunities that have came to me, and I don't shy away from the fact that it's because I've worked hard and I've tried to make them happen. So at the moment within the Scottish FA, I've got a remit to grow the girls and women's game in the region I work in, within the South East region, which I'm really, really enjoying. We've got great clubs in the region that we support to help us do this. We're trying to build strong pathways, which is tough because the game's going so quickly, and sometimes we need to really try and react to keep things in place to keep girls and women of all ages as part of the game. I'm also a qualified coach educator with the Scottish FA, and the pandemic we've had in the last couple of years has really made that evolve to a lot of online learning, another experience. You know, coach educating over a digital platform is good. Obviously, we still do some of it on the pitch as well. I've actually got a role seconded 2 days a week to work within primary schools, which I absolutely love, and I think there's a massive place for it. Again, it's a different type of coaching, so I'll do sessions for the Scottish FA where it's people that want to be there and are good at football, and then I'll do a session at a school the next morning of people that have to be there because it's school and maybe aren't great at football. You know, it's totally different coaching if you're trying to spark that interest and that love for the game, or maybe just work on the kind of finer motor skills that they need to go and pursue any sport that they want to work, they want to try. It doesn't have to be football. And yeah, I've taken so much learning from both those roles, and you know, the schools has gave me a whole bank of new physical literacy exercises, tag games, relay races, things that keep everybody moving and everybody engaged. And of course, you can take parts of that into your club training as well. So yeah, I love working with Scottish FA. I spin a couple of different plays, but that's through choice because I like to grab opportunities when they come. I've got a role in the girls and women's game. I've got a secondment in the primary schools. I'm a qualified coach educator, and I take some of our performance squads as well in the central and the southeast region. So I'm coaching tonight actually through in Mullerwell with the central performance squads. So yeah, again, just get the opportunities and learn as much as you can while you can, and obviously enjoy it as well. I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, and we both agree that every session should be fun. We talk about relays and all that, you know, different ideas. And I came across, obviously, your work for the last couple of years, but, you know, you created something called Scoreboard Soccer, which I really, really think is excellent. You know, I've taken 3 or 4 sessions from it, but can you just tell us why you created it, what is it about, and the kind of the mindset of, you know, the creation?
Yeah, and it's actually a really good tie-in with everything we spoke up to now, which is experience and seeing what's actually happening out there in the coalface, because you can sit and you can plan sessions and you can do courses, and you need to get yourself out there. So Scoreboard Soccer has really only been called Scoreboard Soccer with a fancy name, a fancy logo and a fancy app because you know, I was locked down for a big part of the last couple of years, and I was on furlough, and I wasn't doing all the things that keep me busy that I've just touched on. So, as much as the name, the logo, and the share in these games is something that's quite new to a lot of coaches, I've been coaching this way for years and years, long before I had a fancy name and a fancy logo for it. So, the mindset is letting your eye be the coach. You know, what's actually happening in front of you, and what interventions do you need to do to make your session the best it can possibly be. So, I'm a big believer in letting the game be the teacher. Small-sided games, love it, it's fantastic. There's a big drive at the moment from a lot of very good coach educators around it. I go out there one night, I'm playing 3v3 games, I've split the group into loads of 3v3s, I'm letting them play. What's actually happening though, I've got one young player who can just dominate the ball. You know, this young player can dribble by everybody, score a goal, the second other team tried to build. You know, they'll steal the ball, they'll score again, and you're thinking, okay, like, can I make this environment any better? Now, unlike some coaches who would maybe see that as a bad thing and instruct that player, almost joystick coach that player, you have to play through touch or you need to pass the ball, I'm like, well, this is great, I've got this young player that can dribble by everybody and score, but I've also got a duty of development to all the other players. What am I going to do here? And with experience and trial and error, I decided to add a scoreboard, which is now being called a scoreboard. So I would say, you know, fantastic, David, great dribble, come over to the scoreboard. David runs over, big smile on his face. He knows it's a good thing, positive reinforcement to get the ball dribbled by everybody and score. He'll put a ball on top of a cone to signal that's the point for his team. And then he'll get back on the pitch and he'll play again. He thinks he's getting praised, big pat in the back, but momentarily he's just getting removed from the game so we can share the ball with the 2 or 3 other players on the pitch, we're playing, you know, VV3s. And it just kind of grew arms and legs from there. For example, why am I only praising dribbling and goal scoring? There's so much more to the game than that. You know, so a bit of Q&A with the young players. Okay, if you score a goal, come to the scoreboard, you know, put a point on your team's scoreboard. But what else might I be looking for as a coach? And of course, the kids are going to vocalise teamwork and passing, moving, and that Cruyff turn that we worked on in training, we can try and do that in the game, and taking players on or passing, moving, scanning, whatever it might be. I'm saying, right, well, if I see any of that, you might get sent to the scoreboard. And it's just an environment, if your listeners check out Scoreboard Soccer, it's just an environment where you let them play, but you try and catch them do good. And that's all it is. Yeah, fantastic pass, Sarah, come to the scoreboard. Rebecca, great dribble. And I can tell you from experience, when you say, oh, David, great communication for your teammates, come to the scoreboard, they're all now trying to communicate, you know, because they want to win the game. They're competitive by nature. And you just need to make sure that your scoreboards are right next to the pitch. You know, there's no hidden fitness with them running away. They're right next to the pitch. They're fun, they're engaging, and they want to go there as well. So again, we talk about it growing arms and legs. Why can't the scoreboard have some practice there as well? Yeah. You know, so we do crossbar challenge, we do beat the goalie, we do Panenka kicks where they need to flick the ball, you know, over a cone and into a trash can. You know, we do loads of fun things. We bring along board games. We ask the kids to come up with their own scoreboards. And what you have now is you create an environment that, as I say, the game is still the teacher. You're letting them play, but they're mindfully trying to impress and they're trying to do something good. And it gives you an opportunity to call out real positive behaviours and maybe highlight ones that aren't great. You know, I've had kids that have did a rough tackle on a player and I said, well, what could you have done to maybe get sent to the scoreboard? Well, I could have said sorry, I could have helped them up. So there's a big element to it, particularly in the book, around transferable skills. You know, I think we have a kind of duty of care, not only to be talking about passing, dribbling and shooting with our young players, but also respect, communication, leadership, teamwork, all these kind of things, being inclusive, etc, etc.
Yeah, and one of my favourites actually is the Connect 4-1, and it's just absolutely... It's like we did. I did it with a part of my business, you know. Like I work with different children and youth, and see it's amazing because see the older ones. Obviously, they're competitive. The younger ones are really competitive, but we obviously mix them up just a little bit. But it as you say, it's a communication thing. There's a mentor there. There's a go and win it, and there's a competitive. But see that way, if they make a mistake, you know, the younger ones, the older ones are not gonna, you know, going to, you know, criticise. It's no worries, we'll try again next time. And I think that's like, as I said, like, how do you, it's something from our childhood, you know, like a board game, can you turn it into a football game, which turns into, like I've got, you know, hundreds of ideas, but as you said, it's like, can we actually praise the children for doing something really well, but there's an element of a, not a competitive, but there's a, of like, oh, do you know what, you've done really well. But this is the thing, you see it, you've probably seen it from a long time working with children. So, see if you say to like young children and you've done a great job, but you could try this idea. They just turn off for that negative. You've done a great idea, that was brilliant, 1 point for you, brilliant. On you go out, they're buzzing. In 5 seconds, they're trying a bit. And it's the, like, the as you said, it's all about having that fun element, but there's a competitive, but they're learning how to do ball mastery. Yeah. They're learning how to pass the ball, how to move the ball, how to score a goal. But it's not like hidden fitness. It's a game. Like I do a lot of the experiences I have, you know, working with young children. It's not toe taps. It's like Hulk smashes or, you know, monster trucks. But they're like, the parents are like, why is he acting like a child? I said, because the children react off of you. If you start to coach a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old, like football, they don't really, they maybe very rarely they will understand it, you know, a way. But if you do it like your way, you know, scoreboard, they've learned how to deal with that. They've learned how to do it. But, you know, I think it was such a great idea because, as I say, we live in such a negative world sometimes.
That's a big part of it, the mindset, because sometimes the default mindset as a coach is, well, what are they doing wrong and what can they do better and how can I tell them to improve? You know, it's feedback that's maybe quite negative or, you know, hidden negative because you're trying to get them to, but, you know, my thing is, well, actually we need to praise what they're good at as well. You know, we need to catch them doing good. We need to stick to our strengths as well. And of course, there's a place for other methods of coaching as well, but sometimes coaches scoreboard soccer. Let's just play and let's catch them do good. And we don't have any predetermined ideas of what we're going to work on today. It's just we're playing and we're looking and highlighting and praising, rewarding, encouraging good behaviours, which leads to good habits, which creates a positive, you know, team or individual culture. And again, I've coached it for years, so I've seen players really, really come on. And all coaches that are listening will have different things that they'll praise and they'll emphasise more than others. But, you know, I'm so big on effort over outcome. You know, if a kid sprints back 20 yards to make a tackle but misses a tackle, I'll still praise the effort to sprint back. Just sprint back more, their tackling will improve. If I've been working on Sarah to take shots, if she takes a shot but she misses a target, I'll still praise that effort. She'll be more motivated to try again, and practice makes perfect. So, you know, the culture that I use it to create the behaviours that I very often call out is effort, trying your best, teamwork, communication, resilience, the good players actually lifting up the other players instead of getting frustrated when they're doing something wrong. And you'll have coaches that are listening that, you know, they might want to use it to praise one-touch passing and moving, or, you know, playing through the lines or taking players on. We'll all have our own beliefs and our own cultures and our own philosophies, and hopefully from some of them listening, they can they can use that. But yeah, it's about letting them play, catching them doing good. And young players, and most of us involved in football, we're competitive by nature as well, so that visual scoreboard and those parameters to actually win the game really, really help. I can't tell you how many small series games I've done as a coach where I've totally lost track of score. I don't know who the winner is. Of course, I've said to the kids, you know, 10-star jumps for the losing team, and or like first team to 10 goals wins, and they're just words that don't mean anything, and kids will quite quickly pick up on that. You know, they like fairness, they put a high value on fairness, they put a high value on competition. You want them jumping in the car then and saying, I won the scoreboard soccer game because I made a great pass and Coach David said I could come put the ball on the cone. You don't want them jumping in the car at the end of training and saying, yeah, Coach David said the other team won, but we actually had two goals when he wasn't looking. And like, do you know what I mean? Kids are competitive and they want that visual scoreboard. So it's a real simple idea. The thing about scoreboard soccer is, if anyone's listening who are a brand new volunteer, mum, dad, gran or grandparent, and they're just starting to coach and they're a bit apprehensive about coaching, they see all the literature about let the game be the teacher and play small-sided games, there could be some barriers for you if you do that. You know, you could have a big gap in ability levels, you could have players that are disengaged, you could have some behavioural issues. If you're a brand new coach, what, in my opinion, as a coach educator and as an experienced coach, if you go out there and get them into small-sided games, but you have this scoreboard, it will help you keep them in check. There'll be more engagement, there'll be better behaviour, and it'll be, you know, small-sided games, but the scoreboard will keep everybody engaged and in check. However, if you're also listening to this and you're like ourselves, Laurie, you know, you've coached for a long time, you've got a lot of experience, you've got a lot of knowledge, scoreboard soccer will help you impart that knowledge as well. Because although you're praising players for good individual behaviours, what you're actually doing is you're changing the picture in the game. While Laurie's over the scoreboard, the teams now need to negotiate 4v3 counter-attacking, defending outnumbered. How do they delay the attack until Laurie quickly gives the team a point and then gets back on the scoreboard? So for maybe more experienced and more high-level coaches, again, your eye will be the coach. Okay, 4v3, attacking overload, all four of them have bombed forward, they've lost the ball, the team of three have passed it to Laurie coming back from the scoreboard, he's scored again, I'll bank that, I'll use my observation skills, I'll write that down, let's see if they there's a problem, let's see if they go and solve it next time.
Yeah.
Happens again, you maybe just coach over the top, it happens again, you think, okay, I found the kind of ceiling that they have, I'm going to go in, right guys, what's happening? Oh well, we keep losing the ball, all four of us go forward, they just pass it to the player, come back to the scoreboard. Okay, what might you do next time? Well, I guess one of us could sit off the game, give a little bit of balance, scan, watch the player coming back from the scoreboard, you know, be that kind of Sergio Busquets player that just kind of, you know, keeps a bit of depth in the team. Right, guys, go and try that. So it gives you an opportunity to coach as well, and coach what you see. You know, you, and again, you might intentionally you know, create an environment where, right, David's this fantastic young player, 1v1s and 1v2s, he's absolutely dominating. I have a duty as a coach, if I have a player that can take on two or three players, I need to try and get him to take on four, five or six. You know, that's how we, 1v1s, in my opinion, is not how we develop the next Maradona, Pele, Ronaldo, Messi, Bale, Neymar, etc., etc. So what I might actually do is I might intentionally call over all of his teammates to the scoreboard. I might just be saying, manipulate the environment. Sarah, great pass, come over. David, fantastic dribble, you come over. Jamie, good teamwork, you come over. And you leave that player on the ball now, one against four.
Yeah.
Right, there's a problem, you know, go and deal with it. So yeah, I'm probably going off again on, as we both like to do, again on a bit of a tangent, and I know these things are better demonstrated on a pitch, but hopefully that's maybe sparked some interest in some of your listeners to go and try some of the games, because first and foremost, good fun. It's a culture of praising and highlighting positive behaviours, and it gives you a great opportunity to coach within the game.
Yeah, definitely. There's two parts to the... It was actually... You always have to get a Barcelona thing in there, because I know you're a Barcelona huge fan. Could you believe it when I met you in the plane? I'm like, oh, where's he going? You know, whatever, a couple of years ago. Nick, obviously, you've got a book coming out, but just part of that... You looked at... Obviously, you work with a lot of children. Do you think this could work for adults? A little bit.
Oh, yeah. It's better with adults, and I'm not just saying that. I'm not just saying that, but when I'm setting up with kids, it might take them a wee bit of time to get it, and it might take you a bit of time to build that culture of them all, you know, catching them doing good. If I go out there with eight competent under-16 players or under-17 players, and I say, right, guys, 4v4, there's a wee bit of goal at the side here if you do something good, they get it straight away. And most adults that work in football are big kids anyway. So when I go out and I do coach education or scoreboard soccer and have 30 to 40-year-old men and women, I'm like, yeah, go and play it. Because these are men and women that sign up to play five-a-side on a Wednesday night, you know? Like, why wouldn't they like a wee game that's just a small-sided game, essentially, with an opportunity to go and try and hit the crossbar? How many coaches do you see when the kids are getting a water break, they'll kick a ball at their feet, they'll try and hit the crossbar? Or they're trying to do something fun with the ball at their feet, because that's what we love. So, yeah, I think it's better. With adults, I love playing the games. When I've worked with under-20 players, it's small-sided games, so there's good fitness. It's still overloads and underloads. And all I say to anyone who works with that age group is, don't call it scoreboard soccer and make your scoreboards a little bit more serious, you know? So I've been out there, and my scoreboard for under-20s players is... we put a line of mannequins as a wall, and we're trying to get free kicks into the top corner, you know? Yeah. So I can get a player, you know, oh, great goal, come to the scoreboard, they run over, they put a ball down, they try and whip a free kick into the top corner, they're having to do that tired, they're having to do that quick, perform that skill under these stresses, and then get back on and help their team because they're a player down. So my under-20s are working on overloads and underloads, just like my under-12s might be. I've used position-specific players as scoreboards. You know, so if Richard takes my corner kicks, I'll give him a bag of balls, put him out the corner flag, set up a small-sided game around the halfway line, and if you get sent to the scoreboard, you make a run in the box, and Richard delivers a ball in. You know, my corner kick taker is the scoreboard. You know, he's just firing corners in, and anyone who gets sent over gets to go and try and finish them.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you use your goalie as the scoreboard, a bit of beat the goalie. So if I can paint a picture of another one, I do a lot with older players. The goalie coach will be over, doing one-to-one, volleys into hands, whatever it might be with the coach. The second he sees someone's getting sent to the scoreboard, that goalie coach will lay off a ball to the edge of the box for the striker or the player running over to try and finish. You know, and hopefully some of your coaches in their minds will be racing on what they can do. But similarly, I've brought my centre back out, and you know, they become the scoreboard. Put a wee 10x10 area, and anyone who gets sent over is trying to dribble by them 1v1. If they get success, they win the ball, you give that positive feedback. If they get beaten 1v1, right, next time the next player comes over, just get side on, get on your toes. You know, remember you dived in there, and remember it's all about trying to delay in these 1v1 situations. So hopefully, and obviously the book goes on to this as well, hopefully you can see how it could work for younger players, and of course it could work for older players.
Yeah, and talking about the book, you know, that was launched a couple of weeks ago, was that right? Or
Yeah.
Can you just tell us, obviously, your mindset behind the book? Because I think it's interesting, because I've seen it, you've done a lot of, you know, on your social media, and, you know, you've created it, but did you use sessions from things before, or how does the book, how are you interacted the sort of interacted the book into kind of from your sessions to the book?
The thing about the book was I just had a bit more time to do something like this because of the furlough scheme and being on lockdown and COVID. You know, I had more time in the house more than anything else, because I always share ideas on social media. It goes right back to our first point that, you know, coaches don't get sight of the whole process though. You know, they see one little drill on social media that I've did with my under-10s that worked really well. But then the frustration I have is an under-10 coach in New Zealand copy and pastes it for his the players that him or her are working for, and it doesn't work because not every U10-year-old in the world is the same. And that's the kind of stuff we need to deep dive into in the book. You know, my process of sharing things on social media hasn't changed for the past 4 or 5 years. I won't share anything that I've not done. I still plan, as much as Tactical Pad's great and looks great, I still plan every session on pen and paper. Every session on pen and paper. I deliver that session. I take my notes on pen and paper. If I think I'll use it again and it's worthwhile, I'll create it on Tactical Pad so next time I can just watch it. And then I'll put it on social media because I think it worked well with a certain group. But, you know, they don't get sight of, you know, some of the progressions I put in and maybe some of the coaching points I had. So all the book has done is given me the opportunity to have a deeper dive into some of the work I do. Because I've just spoke to you, you know, at length about Score More Soccer. And if your coaches only took this podcast, they'd think, all right, so David's saying Score More Soccer's something we should all do. The book has a big section on it about when it's not, when Score More Soccer's not for your players. There's three curriculums in the book. There's Storybook Soccer for the younger ones, Scoreboard Soccer for a certain age group, and then Strategy Soccer for when they're a bit older. And of course there's a bit of overlap, as I just spoke about. Some of the Strategy Soccer session plans involve a wee bit of Scoreboard Soccer. But yeah, it's just that deeper dive. That was my mindset, just trying to give coaches a wee bit more of, you know, full session plans, things that are difficult to share on social media and get sight of without reading through, you know.
Yeah, and where can people purchase the book?
Yeah, I mean, just from all major retailers. If you type in Scoreboard Soccer, David Baird, the book should come up, kind of thing. You know, it's on Amazon, obviously, if you want the delivery. It's on Amazon. It's available in WH Smith. It's available in a couple of different retailers across the world. So hopefully they can just find it online. And as you know, I'm always happy to answer questions and come and speak to clubs. You know, I've got a presentation there that's sitting for any clubs that want a more visual dive into Scoreboard Soccer. You know, see some of the clips of the games and see the players playing them. So if they have any issues finding the book or want to see some examples of Scoreboard Soccer, they can get me on social media at Coach David Baird.
Yeah, and they get three questions here, like our kind of quick fire, but to an extent. But how do you deal with setbacks? What happens if something goes wrong? How do you? Because I can tell you've got a very, very good growth mindset, but sometimes, like me and you, sometimes things happen and you think, oh no, what's happened here? You know, do we, as coaches, we sometimes panic, you know, and thinking, whoa, what's going on here? But how do you deal with things? Because it's I know everyone's different, but it'd be good to hear how kind of different people deal with setbacks.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that's probably helped me is, like, somewhere in my mindset at some point, I've developed this idea that setbacks are good and I should be actively seeking them, yeah, as opposed to avoiding them. You know, like, again, I speak about my experience in America. Like, yeah, you can do your tried and tested favourite session, everyone, but just go and try and find something that doesn't work or something that's a wee bit more complicated, and then, you know, you've maybe learned from it. And, you know, that goes for me as a coach, but also to my players. You know, if a player's finding a session far too easy over a number of sessions, then, you know, they need to be actively seeking that setback, you know. And I talk all the time about how big a fan I am at certain age groups and certain programmes of the idea of best versus rest. You know, you might not call it that with your players, but if you know a 5v5, one or two players are just going to dominate, then play 3 against 7. And get those three actively seeking setbacks. Try and actively put them in something that's tough. So I don't know if I have a certain way of dealing with setbacks. Certainly I've had them. You know, jobs that I've applied for that I've not got, sessions that haven't worked, criticism from parents at sidelines. You know, certainly I've had them. And when you kind of have this idea, okay, here's a setback. This is something that's getting set to test me. If I come out the other side, I'll be a better person than coach for it. Then, yeah, that's just my mindset. I want to find setbacks.
Yeah. And what motivates you? Who motivates you? Do you motivate yourself, or does it family motivate you at all? Or?
No, as cheesy as it sounds, I think the sport motivates me. You know, football's my life. I love it. I've spent time in America and met particularly American friends who've never really heard of soccer, they don't know what it is, and they're like, how can you love something so much? And when you explain that, well, all my best memories come from as a kid playing, you know, I'm best friends with people now because we met through football. I have a good relationship with my mum, dad and my brothers because we went to games when we were younger. Actually, football pays my bills. It keeps a roof over my head. It's given me opportunities to travel and meet people. So the beautiful game inspires me more than anything else, and also the inspiration that, you know, we have a role to actually keep the game beautiful, because there's a lot of things out there right now that are threatening that. You know, there's a lot of racism and homophobia, and the game's only for certain people, and there's advances in the sport that I'm maybe not a big fan of, that takes the game further away from the kids that are kicking a ball in the park, and it's harder for them to aspire to be who they want to be. So the game motivates me. I love the game, but also, the more I coach in it, the more I realise that I quite like people, and I like the fact that I can get out there and I can hear the weird and wonderful things that the 4s and 5-year-olds are talking about or want to tell you about. You know, I'll say, hi guys, I'm Coach David, and they'll start to tell me that their dad's name's David, or they lost a tooth last night, or, yeah. You know, they just come out with some great stuff. But then you go and you do a walk-in football session, and you have 80, 90-year-old men and women that are telling you about what football was like in their day, and, you know, the cost of a game was like 3 pence, and just, yeah, the game motivates me, but also the fact that my job involves working with people motivates me as well.
Yeah, you're actually inspiring me at the moment. You know, so I get inspired by, it's fascinating, because, you know, so you've got a tangent a little bit. I think it's just the way you have that passion, you know what I mean? And listen to a lot of people, and like, people, I like working with people, you know, say it, everyone, right? It doesn't matter, because you can learn small things from small people. The wee 5-year-old who, you know, has a question for you, but you've never heard before, but you think about, oh, that's actually quite interesting. Then the 50, you know, the 90-year-old who's, you know, telling about something else, and it's like, that's interesting. And then, of course, again, the game, you know, the passion we have. Like, I'm not a Rangers or Celtic fan, you know, but see that way you see the old firm, you know, that electricity. Then you've got obviously Liverpool's electricity there, Dortmund, you know, then you go, you know, down to Brazil, you know, the fans, is absolutely fascinating. But sorry, that's just me kind of having my reminiscence. But, you know, final couple of two questions. Apart from your own book, what's your kind of favourite book and your favourite podcast?
Yeah, no, I think there's probably a lot of books that are going to come up when you ask coaches this. So there's a few that I could reel off that are really, really good. But one that's maybe a wee bit different, because it's not too coaching. I don't know if you've heard it or not, Laurie. It's called The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath. I believe they're two brothers, American maybe. The Power of Moments. I've taken so much from it into my coaching. And as the title suggests, it talks about how powerful these moments can be. And I've probably just touched on that when I think back to my childhood and these great moments of scoring what I perceive to be great goals in front of all my friends, giving me high fives. It does tend to be the more positive things that sometimes that you remember. Yeah. And this tells you how to create those moments, how to create real positive, never forget, you know, unforgettable moments for the players that you're working with. So yeah, like a couple of wee side bits about it. I won't talk about this book too much, but hopefully some of your coaches go and check it out. You know, it talks about this idea of like the peak and the end theory, how most experiences people remember the peak and then they remember the end, and some of the bad stuff that happened in between is quite easily forgotten. It's really interesting. So trying to have this peak moment in your session, and that might be the crossbar and the crossbar challenge, the kid hitting it and loving it, and then ending on a real high so they're buzzing to come back. It's just really, really interesting stuff. It tells you how you can build, you know, really good peak moments as well. And the interesting fact is most peak moments come from what they call a pitfall. Yeah. So, you know, most people like, they got the order wrong at the restaurant, but then they gave us free drinks all night. You know, it's actually elevated the good thing because there was a bad thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the flight was overbooked and we had to wait for 3 hours, but then they put us in first class and they paid for our hotel. You know, it's really interesting that sometimes just putting a little bit of, and this is my interpretation into my coaching, putting a little bit of challenge and a little bit of resilience almost at the start, and then building in a lot of success and a lot of joy, can really give people a really fun footballing experience. Whereas a more traditional session, you're maybe building up from like easy to hard, whereas I've kind of changed that a wee bit in my practice. So yeah, I would check out The Power of Moments. Podcasts, there's loads of great ones, and I won't show any favouritism because I've been on a few that have just been great chat. So I'll throw one out there that's just a wee bit more lighthearted, a wee bit more interesting. It's the one with Amy Irons and Craig Levine. I'm not sure if you've listened to it. Sacked in the Morning. Really good laugh, good stories from inside the world of, you know, more professional football. And it's, the tagline is like a manager's guide to surviving and management or something like that. It tells you about how cutthroat that industry can be. So yeah, Sacked in the Morning is a great listen.
Yeah, and the final question is, what does mindset mean to you?
Oh, well, it's everything, isn't it? You've caught me off guard here with quite a heavy question, but it's important. I said earlier, your mind's like a parachute. It works best when it's open. So it's everything. You can look at something as being a real negative and a real challenge, and it can get you down. Or as we've discussed at length on this podcast, you can say, "Oh, good. Here's a challenge, and I'm going to be better for it." So yeah, open minded, try and approach things face on with the right manner. That's what it means to me.
Yeah, no, I think that's that phrase, mindset, you know, with a parachute. I'm going to steal that because that's just incredible. As I said, I'm one of these people, when I do these podcasts, I like to listen to people, but I just get to be the selfish person. It sounds terrible, but learn from other people. But no, thank you again, David, for taking the time to talk to us.
No, I've really enjoyed it, Laurie. I really like it. It's informal and just chatting, and I'll do it anytime. So thanks so much.
No worries.